Hey everyone, a quick message before we begin today's episode. My producer tells me that Google Podcasts is disappearing. So if you've been listening to this podcast on Google, or maybe you're doing that right now, I need you to do me a favor and switch over to one of the other platforms. You're welcome for that advice. Now, on to today's program. What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another episode of Your Welcome. Guys, it's UFC 299 Fight Week. Right here, it's upon us, and I'm quite excited because this is one of the better cards in recent memory. I'm going to get down to the co-main event between Dustin Poirier and the French guy, and I'm also going to talk about a rematch between Sugar Sean and Chito Vera. Plus, Henry Cejudo has a new podcast, and he said something about Max Holloway that caught my attention. I'm going to get into all of that on today's program, but first, I want to take a look back at what happened over the week. All right, guys, let's talk a little Umar Nurmagomedov. Now, one thing about Umar that has been blatantly obvious and that I have appreciated is he will let you know. I mean, Umar will do a good job, and I would say a better job than young, early on Khabib did. Good job of letting you know who he is, where he ranks, and who he wants to fight, right? So, Umar had a great week. He's calling people out. He's got this beautiful record. He's got a beautiful name. What else, though? You guys go. We're being nice to Umar right now, right? We're only telling the good stuff. What do you want to throw in the pile? He's got the name. He's got the record. Help me. What else? Now, I'm not arguing for you that you got to have 10 or 11 or that there's any kind of magical number on compliments that people can readily hand to you. What I will let you know is more times than not, a guy is unaware and his self-unawareness is annoying. We see this so often. A guy will want to push or he'll want to renegotiate with the company or he'll want more money or he'll start making these demands. All because he read press clippings that people like you and I put out about him that were positive, where we liked him and we saw some potential. And we gave them the pat on the back and the attaboys. And all of a sudden, they start to get misinterpreted. And then all of a sudden, booking a guy for fights, he's not going to fight that guy. Why is he not going to fight that guy? Well, that guy's not good enough. That guy doesn't deserve it. That guy hasn't earned it. That guy's not ranked high enough. And your stomach's getting sick. And what are you even talking about? None of that has anything to do with anything, but it does in certain guys' bubbles. And once they make it real, man, it stays real with them. So, when I'm looking at Umar, and by the way, if I was to break down the X's and O's of that fight, the worst part of the fight for him was my favorite. It's tough sometimes to know, is a guy just better than everybody? I mean, right? Like, what kind of credit does he get if there's a gap between his skills and everybody else? Now, on the other side of the coin, what are you supposed to do about it? If you give him guys, and they're trained, and they're mixed martial artists too, and they're professionals, but we know it when we see it. We know it when we see it. And it's very hard for us to push a guy if we don't see adversity. And it's very hard for a guy to deal with adversity if he is meaningfully better than the competition, right? You can't get that kind of analysis. That made perfect sense, didn't it? Which is why it was so incumbent and even important and helpful that he went down. Boom, big shot, knees weak. Guy comes on top. I mean, this is what separates us from boxing to a huge degree. Whereas boxing, you get in trouble, they are going to stop that right there. They're going to start counting. They're going to send you to the corners. They're going to check your gloves. They're going to look in your eyes. There's going to be all sorts of time in between before you go back out there. In our sport, you can either recover or that fight is getting stopped. Nurmagomedov recovered, but he never got back up to his feet. He's recovering on his knees, and he's dazed. His opponent comes in to swarm him. He's on a single, switches to a double. With his whole exchange ends, which, by the way, that whole exchange that took me 30 seconds to tell you guys about, that whole exchange was less than 3 seconds in real time, and Umar's on top. And I don't know that I have full confidence in telling you, had they not gone through that scramble, that Umar had another way to get on top. I don't know that I have full confidence in telling you if Umar wanted a takedown that he could just go out and get it. I mean, this opponent, this guy was good. Real good. All right. So Umar gets done with the fight and he stays on brand, right? Everything's on brand. Turns out he's tough. Turns out he can weaponize pace and conditioning just like cousin Khabib. He's in there interviewing. What does he want to do next? Now, I'm going to bury my lead. Do you guys know who he called out? I'm going to bury my lead, but let me tell you why. When I tell you the rankings don't matter, like that is so obviously a broad stroke. And I get in our comment section, we get in these back and forth and the rankings do matter and Chael thinks you should get it all done with your mouth. It's a broad stroke. There's a time and a place for him. There's a reason in 2012 we created the rankings when prior to 2012 we did the sport since 1993 and never had them. Like, it's not as though they don't belong to a degree. The problem is nobody knows what anybody's ranked except for the guy that's got the ranking. That's where you get confused. If you can fight a guy that's ranked number one, I want to fight the number one guy. When you want to fight the number one guy, that is a byproduct of his popularity. You want to fight a guy that's known, that's got a name, that you can get some rub off of, that you can do interviews and media, that you can be opposite a poster. People will stop what they're doing. They'll see that poster in Times Square. They'll know who at least one of the two of you are. You want to fight that guy that I just described way before you want to fight a guy that's number one. You got to have that name recognition. You must have, to get to the top, the mandate of the masses. You must. Nurmagomedov understands that to a degree. Nobody at 135 pounds has a better ranking than this gentleman. I apologize. Got my R's confused. A better record. It's perfect. He's completely undefeated. Now we got to start getting those names, right? Calls out Corey Sandhagen. And I thought it was so perfect. I thought it was so perfect because now all of a sudden he's aligning himself with a name that we know. By the way, Umar is ranked number 13. Corey Sandhagen is ranked number 3. I mean, it really is something impressive. And one of the guys, this is off the top of my head, but is in front of Sandhagen happens to be Aljo, who, by the way, left the division. Aljo's a 145 pounder now. He's looking to kick things off, possibly become a number one contender. That's the great possible number one contenders match that the world isn't speaking about. But this is how good Corey's doing, which is my one and only point. Now, I would feel bad for Corey if he had to do that fight. Corey Sandhagen has earned and deserved a title shot for as far back as my memory can recall. And when he laid out Frankie Edgar, boom, you just stamped your ticket into a title shot. The night that we named him, in a derogatory reasons, we named him a Sandhagen for not following his own career, they were trying to give him a title shot then. So, I mean, in all fairness, you go and watch Sandhagen versus Rob Font. Sandhagen's shown one weakness in his entire career, which was his wrestling. It happened to be his defensive wrestling. But just to show that he shored that up, he went out and beat Rob Font with offensive wrestling. Sandhagen's great. Can we give him that? He's great. Fighting those guys from Dagestan is a pain in the ass. Can we also agree on that? They are the one team that has risen to the top and stayed at the top that has ignored the more fundalized philosophical beliefs that you must be great everywhere. They are one mission heavy, which is grappling and topside grappling at that, followed by ground and pound, but in that order. So it's just a very tricky thing to even know how to prepare for. Like, as you're spreading your time around, knowing that's his strength, you don't want to put all of your time in a training camp into something that's defensive because that's represented a weakness anyway. It just creates for a very hard matchup. Okay, great. Well, what do? You avoid it. You tactically avoid it. Before you get called out, you call somebody else out that's more interesting. Or in Sandhagen's spot, you match him up yourself. Well, if Sandhagen has to respond to this, if he says yes, okay, fine, we're done. It's yes. But let's say he doesn't want to say that and he doesn't want to look cowardly. Then he needs to take Umar and get him and Merab. Tell us some behind-the-scenes story. Tell us how these two have been ducking each other. tell us how, hey, that's the real fight, and I'm not going to get in the way of that. Everybody wants to see that, but I'll be waiting for... I mean, there's ways to manipulate this and massage this. Because Sandhagen, in all fairness, qualifies for a title shot. You're a jerk if you say he doesn't. And you guys aren't jerks. But somebody named Nurmagomedov, who's 16-0, also deserves a title shot. Like, right, I can stop you right there without giving you any more information or telling you who those opponents are against. But guy is 16-0. It's kind of hard to deny him. So I predict for you, we probably will go down that road. I predict for you a very good likelihood of seeing Sandhagen versus Nurmagomedov. And it's not just because of the call out or where those guys happen to lie. It has to do with the fact that our number one contender has been established prior to the title fight being held. Not generally how things get done. We're in a bit of a rare time. It has happened before. It's not a one-off, but it's a bit of a rare time that Merab, in this case, is announced to be in the finals, sitting there to take on the winner of a championship match that still has yet to be called. So there's an interesting game going on. Merab's going to be flown to Miami. Merab's going to be sitting in the front row. The front row is reserved for the story that we all know, which is he'll be thrown on TV. It's what's called a cameo. Crowd will give a quick reaction. Be a wonderful time in his life because he'll have all the joys of fighting with none of the stresses of actually getting punched. He'll have DC and Rogan, John Anik, the announcing, saying, here's your number one contender. Then he just needs the fight to come to conclusion. And whichever guy comes out on top to take that microphone and to call for him, at which time he'll push through security and they'll get their first face-off. That's the plan, right? Well, what if the guy that wins and takes the microphone has a different plan? And what if we like the new plan that we've yet to hear better? The only thing you need to know about this sport and number one contenderships and title shots and who's going when is nothing in this sport is done until it's done. Versus Chito Vera. This thing has been jumping around. You go to DraftKings right now, you got minus 265 to plus 235. Here's what you have to ask yourself. When you're having an argument about who's going to win between Sean O'Malley and Chito Vera, when you're having that spirited debate and you're both going back and forth and that's what makes you excited, you can't wait till the fight comes so you can tell your buddy, haha, I told you so. You're going to have just as much passion in that argument with that same buddy arguing about who was winning the first contest. I was there live. I was at the Apex. Sean O'Malley was this up-and-comer. People knew who he was. He'd come to the Dana White Contender Series. He'd smoked a joint with Snoop Dogg. He had the hair. He was wearing the shirts and jackets. I mean, it was one of these things. And he's going to take on Chito Vera. And Chito Vera, and this is off the top of my head, but he was 4-2 at the time. It could have been 2-4 at the time. It was one of these spots, and by the way, those couple of guys that had got the jump on Chito had already been released from the UFC. Like, if you really stared at Cheeto's record at that time, it was a little bit confusing what he was still doing here. I mean, it's important that you tell the story that way, though, accurately, so you can really understand that night. Now, there's a reason that fight hasn't been revisited. So you have these two guys, they go out and compete. Chito Vera got his hand raised. They both keep fighting. They both stay active. Neither one of them goes out with injury. Neither one of them goes out with illness, goes out with suspension. They're competing. They're going through training camps. But one guy becomes number one contender and fights for the belt. The other guy, in Chito, becomes a main eventer and fights victoriously over four former world champions. Imagine that, though, if you're Chito. You have beaten world champions. You just didn't beat them at the right time. You didn't beat them the night they had the world title. I'm talking about Chito versus Dominick Cruz. I mean, what an incredible win. Dominick Cruz, future Hall of Famer. Chito Vera, a guy that they could have released 2 years before. I mean, it's a really interesting thing. And when you watch Chito Vera, you are watching a gritty, dirty street fighter. Period. When you watch him walk to the ring, he walks to the ring like a street fighter would. The same thing as if he was going out behind the track at 3 o'clock after school. But you can feel it. O'Malley, you're dealing with a technician. You can feel it. He's going into a spectacle. He's the one at 3 o'clock going behind the track that's going to make sure the entire school comes out to watch before he throws his first punches. But this fight never got revisited. Why? Don't tell me about the UFC because you're not right. Don't tell me managers couldn't get together. Don't tell me they had other and better things to do. Now, when I see that at DraftKings, when I see a minus 235 to a plus 215, anything along this, you understand that O'Malley's the favorite, right? And you understand that Cheeto won. The fight where they fought that was a surprise when Cheeto could have been released from the organization based on his accolades to that point. And O'Malley had already come through the Contender Series and had the cameo with Snoop Dogg and on his way to the top. O'Malley lost that fight to Cheeto. So it's even more interesting to understand that their trajectories and they just keep on moving through life. But it was O'Malley who, in fact, got the opportunity and got the belt before Cheeto. It's a very interesting thing. So the guys over at DraftKings say that O'Malley's the favorite. So the guys over at DraftKings must be saying, based on looking at two guys at the same weight class doing the same thing under the same rules, that Cheeto was getting the best of him. Is that what you saw? Is that how you remember it? Now, that is officially a victory for Cheeto Vera. I am aware, so you don't think you have to correct me, that the Sugar State Athletic Commission took a look at it and moved it to a no contest. But this will be done over the watchful eye of the Florida State Athletic Commission, and the Sugar State Athletic Commission will have to live with the results. So knowing that these guys already competed, and we understand that O'Malley had an injury, and that changes things, doesn't it? I cannot help but think that the person that set the very line I'm discussing at DraftKings looked at that and says, well, things are different because it was an injury. I've seen that happen. You guys want to know a great example? Anderson Silva versus Chris Weidman, part one. Anderson Silva sustained an injury. And there was something about the injury that changed the fight. And I realize it was the second time when we had the fracture. But think about Weidman versus Silva in part one. Anderson's doing what people said he was being cocky, he's being arrogant. He wasn't. He was trying to set Weidman up. He drops his hands and he goes into a little bit of emotion, trying to get Weidman to pause so we can come with his own offense. But it was within that Weidman caught him. When he caught him, it was like a backhand. And just so many people were so quick to say that scenario couldn't happen again, of which you could be right, but they'd already fought 7.5 minutes and Weidman won all 7.5 of those minutes. But the next time they fought, DraftKings had Anderson as a 2-1 favorite. Well, isn't that interesting? Because that's probably how you remember it as well. There is something about that finish that negates in the viewer's mind the previous body of work. I come from an amateur wrestling background. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen a wrestling match where a guy gets pinned. Supposedly the most dominant thing you can do to somebody, put them down, get both of their shoulders on the mat, have the referee smack the mat, but in the viewer's mind, it's not, he got caught. To have the most dominant thing done to you, a lot of times the viewer with the guy, I need to see that again. He just got caught. And there was something about, because of the injury sustained by O'Malley, that we were happy to act as though it didn't happen. Over at DraftKings, not just acting like it didn't happen, completely changing what happened to the point that when they're going to rematch, O'Malley is now the favorite and not the dog. I just think that's surprising. I think it's very surprising. I think it's very telling when two guys go into the ring to compete. Who wants it? Who wants to be there more? Sometimes you can't control that because you need it more. You need that paycheck more. You need that opportunity more. You've got that goal of being world champion. You haven't been there yet. Are you trying to achieve it? Are you trying to defend it? Like, I know you hear these things and they're buzzwords, but they're very real. And when the going gets tough, who can dig the deepest? I know a lot of people think that is Cheeto Vera, but it meant something to me to see Sean O'Malley on one leg not waving this off. Sean O'Malley's coached him in the corner, seen his athlete, who he couldn't be closer with, right? And that is a brother bond, that corner athlete. Knowing that he's hurt, and Tim believed in his athlete enough to leave him in there. He can find a way. Give him a moment, and he will find a way to win this fight, even on one foot. It's very interesting. It is a very compelling storyline. All the while, what's next sits right outside for him. DraftKings already has a line. They just haven't released it yet. They already have a line for Merab versus Cheeto, for Merab versus O'Malley. They just need that piece of business to get done first. And as I'm looking at that piece of business, and it's the second time, not the first time, regardless of what the Sugar State Athletic Commission said, and we, the viewer, still disagree on what we saw the first time. For O'Malley to be the favorite, you must have seen O'Malley win in the fight. For Cheeto to get the opportunity, you must have seen Cheeto win in the fight. It's a very interesting discrepancy, isn't it? It's a very interesting piece of human psychology. How certain athletic events can end. And that ending being wild, being unusual, somewhere within our mind negates everything that happened. So before you go over to DraftKings, or before you argue with your buddy or coworker about who's going to win the fight between O'Malley and Cheeto Vera, you're going to have just as much fun arguing with your buddy or coworker over who was winning the first fight with O'Malley and Cheeto Vera. The heat will be cranked up in Miami for UFC 299, but the action will be even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. New customers who deposit $5 or more can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 back in bonus bet. What's a no-sweat bet? It's like getting another chance if you take an L. Take one on the chin. You get another shot at victory. That's right. Get a bonus bet back in the amount of your original bet if your first bet doesn't hit. Visit the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now for available lines and odds for UFC 299. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code CHAIL. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 if the first bet loses, only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code CHAIL. The ground is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY. Or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. One no-sweat bet per new customer issued as one bonus bet based on amount of initial losing bet. Bonus bet expires 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/promos for deposit, wagering, and eligibility restrictions. Terms and responsible gaming resources. Was a while ago. The weight class was, I'd imagine, 145 pounds. The card was not something I remember. But there was a young man out of Lafayette, Louisiana. Young 20-something years old, who was told that he had a really hard fight against an Irish man named Conor McGregor. And that kid out of Lafayette, Dustin Poirier, who at that time was unrecognizable, who at that time, that name doesn't mean much. Nowadays, I could tell you Dustin, I could tell you Poirier, or I could tell you Lafayette, and you'd tie them all to him. How many guys can you do that? Even your big stars with their hometown, right? Not many. You got the guys from Stockton. The Irishmen would probably qualify. And you got the kid from Lafayette. That's what a big deal Dustin Poirier is. But a number of years ago, he was told by somebody that he had a hard fight. And he believed it. And he went out and he fought like a guy who believed he was having a hard fight. Now, I'm talking about Dustin Poirier's first ever matchup with Conor McGregor. There was nothing different, by the way. Contrary to what an expert you believe you are and how much you know about the sport, there was nothing different between Poirier's skills the second time he and Conor fought and the first time they fought. And there was nothing different about Conor's skills. Now, of course, that's a broad stroke statement. But it still leads me to my conclusion, which is the same. No matter how much wiggle room you want to give me on the statement, Dustin Poirier could have beaten Conor the first time they fought. Skill-wise, he had the skills, he had the endurance, he had the experience. He had everything that he needed to be successful that night. What he didn't have was an ability to overcome the noise. That little voice in his head that lives in all of your heads. When you hear about experience in fighting, it's not the same as experience in soccer, for example, or tennis, for example. When a guy talks about being experienced or being a veteran, you're talking about your ability and his ability to overcome that voice in his head. When you hear fighters talk about, I'm my hardest critic, or the only fight I have is with myself, whenever you hear those types of things, that fighter has that same voice that you all have. But over time, he not only will learn to manage that voice, he will learn to beat it. Or he won't. And a number of people, even that reach the highest pinnacles, don't. And when it's all over and said and done, they will look back with tremendous regret. And it's not regret of not knowing a certain combination, of not using more knees. It's not a regret of not having gone to enough jiu-jitsu practices. It's a regret of having not realized how good they were and at the time when they needed it, believed in it. That's a regret. I bring you that because there is nothing about Poirier's fight with St. Denis that is close. This is one of the most inappropriate and silly narratives that I have seen in my time in the sport. If I could think of a stronger way to say it, I would have. Those are the strongest words that I know to use, and I pick them carefully. St. Denis is the favorite at DraftKings right now to beat Poirier. St. Denis, who's never gone five rounds, who's never been scheduled for five rounds. Dustin Poirier, who is amongst the king of the five-rounders. There's a few guys you could throw in that category. Khabib would belong there. St. Pierre would belong there. Randy Couture would belong there. Like, there's a few guys that do better longer than short, that have proven it, that have the grit, the toughness, the stamina. There's a few guys. But boy, it's only a few guys, and Dustin Poirier is one of them. That doesn't say that St. Denis does not have that or possess that. I'm just pointing out and identifying that we don't know, that it's a mystery. Dustin Poirier, who has been world champion. Dustin Poirier, who has finished guys like Michael Chandler, is the underdog against St. Denis. And by the way, I don't want to disrespect Denis at all. Like, I'm not here to tell you that Denis isn't as good as advertised. He is as good. Dustin's better. If Denis is going to beat him, guys, excuse me, if Denis is going to beat him, okay, let's just break this down into its elements. Do you believe that Denis can outbox Dustin Poirier? Because let me stop you right there. I don't believe you. I don't believe that you believe that. What if we had kicks? And now we're kickboxing. If those two went out and they just kickboxed, do you believe that Denis could beat him? Do you really? Do you believe he could beat him for 3 rounds or the better part of it? Do you really? Do you believe they could beat him for 4 rounds or the better part of it? Do you understand he's going to have to beat him for 5 rounds or the better part of it? Okay, things just got a little slippery for you, didn't they? Okay, fair enough. But if that's not what you hedge your bets on, do you believe that St. Denis could out-wrestle Dustin Poirier? Is that what you believe? No, you probably don't believe that one. We could probably just stop right there. Do you believe that Denis can submit him? Because don't forget, and I know people love to go back and forth and talk about grappling and the importance of grappling. Grappling is pass or fail. You either submitted the guy or you didn't. Like, you don't get to come away and say, I am so much of a better grappler. I am leaps and bounds better than him at grappling. You either submitted him or you didn't. There's no in between with the judges. There's no in between in terms of grappling per the rule set. It doesn't matter if you're a much better grappler. Can you submit him? And moreover, did you submit him? If either one of those answers is no, I got to throw it out. It's irrelevant to this topic. Now, if you had to bet, you had to bet. Dustin Poirier versus Denis in a wrestling match. Who are you going to take? Think about that. You had to bet. Okay, great. Dustin Poirier versus St. Denis in a kickboxing match. You have to bet. Who are you going with? Okay, great. Dustin Poirier versus Denis in any set of rules that we understand. Abu Dhabi rules, I prefer the unified rules of EBI. You can look at Polaris. In a straight-up grappling match, who are you taking? Okay, great. We're going to put all of those things together, and we're going to put them in a card that Dustin Poirier was asked to fight on. That he wasn't originally scheduled. He was asked for ticket sales in a local market. Now, it's not Lafayette. It's not the hometown that he chooses to represent, but boy, he's got enough reach. He got enough friends and enough relationships that they wanted him on the card the same as they would a hometown boy. Dustin Poirier wanted it to be 5 rounds. If I'm going to do you the favor and come and fight on a card that I wasn't originally scheduled for, you're going to do me one back, which is spot me a couple of rounds. Nobody wants more rounds. They only pretend they do. He wanted them and he got them. Now, let's say that Dustin's assessment is right. Let's say those extra rounds favor him. We don't know. We don't actually know until we get there. But let's just say that they do. Then the people that are picking Denis are not only picking Denis, you're picking him to stop Poirier early. Do you really believe that's what's going to happen? Because the odds makers do. And somebody has told Dustin that St. Denis is better. Somebody has told Dustin that Denis is next and Denis is going to beat him. And once upon a time, somebody told him that an Irishman named McGregor was more than he could handle. When Dustin was able to capture that somebody, step on him, rise above it, he was able to get the rematch and a rematch even after that, showcase and prove to the world that no, his skills were in fact superior. So does that mean that the young man from Lafayette has overcome that voice that's in his head the same as it's in everybody else's, or is he still listening to it? That's the only thing I have to know. When you tell me how great Denis is, I agree with you. When you tell me the future is bright, I agree with you. When you tell me Denis can beat Dustin Poirier, that Denis is a better fighter today than Dustin Poirier, that's where I have to stop you, because not only do I not believe you're right, you're not even close. The fact that Denis sits right now as the favorite, and that's never moved from the day it was announced to right now, DraftKings, it's gotten tighter, but it has never changed. I'm here to tell you, DraftKings and you are not just wrong, you are very wrong. Summer is coming up, and that might mean that you're going to have a little more time on your hands. Why not use it to learn a new language? Rosetta Stone, the most trusted language learning program that truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, is here to help you. Some of you may be traveling abroad this summer, and you might want to experience that country beyond just the touristy type spots. Your experience could be upgraded just by learning the native language. Now you can download the Rosetta Stone app to your phone or tablet and learn on the go while driving, riding on the subway, running on a treadmill, or even laying poolside with just a 10-minute lesson per day. Rosetta Stone's lessons are designed for long-term retention of language skills rather than short-term memorization. The focus of the program is preparing you for real, authentic conversations, not just knowing a couple of translations. It's like having your own personal trainer for language learning. Rosetta Stone has been used by millions of people for over 3 decades. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started for a limited time. My listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off. Unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. That's a steal. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Henry Cejudo said that Dana White has a responsibility. He should pull Max Holloway from the fight with Justin Gaethje because Max will never be the same afterwards. Is that awesome or what? I mean, is that an awesomely powerful statement? You're going to stop and look, right? Great job by Henry. Not to mention, Henry studied Max very closely. A lot of people don't know how close Henry was to fighting Max. When Henry decided he was going to return from his retirement, Henry wanted to go right into 145 pounds into a world title fight. In fact, for a period of time, that was a stipulation on Henry returning at all. He had told the UFC, I'll come back, but only for this opportunity. And the UFC said, hey, hold on. And just to remind you, Volkanovski was on top. The UFC said, hey, hold on. Sean Shelby specifically told Henry, I can get you as far as Max. If you beat Max, of course, you would then go into Volk. But I can't start you. I can get you that far. You want to do a deal or not? Now, I'm only sharing that with you just to remind you, Henry knows what he's looking about. Henry knows what he's talking about. Now, Henry is not giving you a fair analysis here or a clean analysis. He is putting over his friend. He's loyal to Justin Gaethje. But let's just stay on the subject. Because to change a guy, for your life to be different after a certain experience, we're not talking about who's better. We're not even talking about a domination. We're talking about a bludgeoning, right? It doesn't matter if a guy could take you down and hold you there and grind it out or snap you down and get you in a front headlock and turn that into an anaconda and reverse that into a Doris before he goes upside down and triangles and inverted as he grabs your ankle. That stuff doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. We're talking about the violence. And Henry's right to bring that to your attention. Henry is very, very correct. There was 2 fights that were signed. And they jumped off the page of all the fights that were inked. Paulo Costa versus Robert Whittaker. You look at that and you just go, oh my gosh, that's going to be hard for both guys. That is not going to feel good. And Max versus Gaethje. I was with Josh Thompson over the weekend. And Josh Thompson, one of the original guys at AKA, won 2 world championships himself, but he was one of the original, one of the first to walk through the door of the American Kickboxing Academy. So Josh was sharing a story with me when Josh was visiting with Khabib, and Khabib told him, hey, Josh, nobody hits like Justin Gaethje. And Khabib told Josh, he said, I spar with you in the same weight class. You were my friend. But I would be lying to you if I told you that you hit me harder or anybody hit me harder than Justin Gaethje. Khabib said there was nothing like it. And I've heard other people say this. I started calling Justin Gaethje fights in something called the World Series of Fighting. You now know that as the Professional Fighters League. But I say it in that condescending tone because Justin Gaethje was as good and fun and durable and reliable and exciting then as he is now. He just wasn't on the tip of everybody's tongue. He was still in that process of trying to build his name. And as I would sit there caged, like calling his fight, right? Relevance to me calling the fight is how close I am to the action. Relevance to that is so I can tell you the sound of the thud when Justin Gaethje would touch you. And it didn't matter if it was the leg or it was with the hands. You could hear it. And when Josh explained to me the way that Khabib explained it to him, right? A game of telephone here. And now I'm attempting to explain it to you. But I knew what he meant. I knew exactly what he meant. And when Henry is saying that Dana should stop it, that Max's life will be different, well, Henry putting his friend over, Henry is also telling you, as an expert in this space, right? Like, if anybody knows what they're looking at, it's not only a world champion in Henry Cejudo. Henry Cejudo is also trained world champions. He knows exactly what he's looking at. What he's telling you is he believes it's going to be a stand-up fight. He does not believe that wrestling is going to be an element. And that's interesting to me. I believed that Max Holloway was one of the best strikers, and I mean the elite top three, in our sport. Now, I believe that not just because I watched Max reach out and touch somebody repeatedly. Freddie Roach had weighed in. And Freddie Roach was asked the top three strikers in our sport. And he included Max Holloway. I thought that was very interesting. Very nice compliment. And another one on that list, it was Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, and Max Holloway. And this is many years ago. But another one on the list, when Freddie Roach had made the statement, was Dustin Poirier, who at the time was signed to fight Max. And when they went out and fought, Dustin was able to throw the rhythm of Max off all night long. And rhythm is an interesting word. And you hear it, you might even use it sometimes. But to really understand what it means, Dustin was able to throw the rhythm of Max off all night long. And if you can do it for the first 5 seconds, then you can do it another 5 seconds. Of course you can. That just makes sense, which is 10 seconds. So if you can do it for 10 seconds, just double that. Go ahead and do it 20 seconds. Well, all of a sudden, 20 becomes 40, 40 becomes 80. Next thing you know, you did it for a whole round. Now go do it for 2 rounds, 5 rounds later. Get the best of him. You walk home the winner, right? It's an important thing in fighting to always know. If something works in a fight, go back to it. If it worked once, it'll work all night. Now, next time you fight, it might not. Because there's video, they're going to watch, they know it's coming, they start to plan counters. But that specific night, if it works once, do it again. And that's what Dustin was able to do with Max. And it was a surprise. But Max was outsized. And Max hadn't fought in that division. And Dustin Poirier, as great as you think of him, wasn't quite the Dustin then as he is now. I mean, there were some things, there were some unforeseens that got in the way of Max and victory. But it was a very interesting point that Henry's trying to make, which is Henry believes in a pure stick'em contest that Justin Gaethje can outpoint, can outscore, can outdamage Max Holloway. Do you agree with that? Justin doesn't have the reach. He doesn't have the speed. He doesn't have the combinations, though very close. Justin does have more lower body attacks. He does have more significant strikes below the belt. But generally, you need the reach to have those be effective. It's a talking point. It's worth considering. And then you've got the size, and that did cost Max the first time at 55. He just was not a 55-pounder. Whether the scale set or not, he did not believe he was. And I don't know that Max believes it now, because Max has stated with a victory, he returns to 45. And with a victory over Gaethje, he would not need to return to 45. Like, he doesn't become closer to a title shot at 45 with a victory over Gaethje than he does at 55. But in his mind, that's where he's supposed to be. And I just find it to be a very interesting element. Max is as good of a fighter as I have ever seen. I can't say that about Justin. Justin is as hard of a fight as I've ever seen. But it's not the same thing. And it makes it very interesting, in my opinion. We've only seen one way to beat Justin Gaethje, which is you have to put him down. You got to stop him. He is never going to quit coming at you. I don't believe that Max plans to do that. I think Max plans to beat Justin in a way that we've yet to see Justin lose a fight. But that's interesting to me. That adds to it for me. That ups my interest. Justin's never taken anybody down. I can't imagine he's going to start now. I think that Henry Cejudo's right. I think these two stay on their feet. I think these two bludgeon one another. The question I've got to you is who is going to win? Doesn't work. Do you believe that? I know that you've heard it. Do you believe that? And allow me to condescend and back up and just tell you what MMA math means, okay? You've got three fighters, and we're going to call them A, B, and C so we can sound like geometrists here. But A fights B, and B fights C. A and C have not yet fought. But you can juxtapose and start to gather through the common opponents how that match would go. Now, when people love to say, you got to have the fight, there's a reason we do the fight. Well, yes, no kidding. I don't make believe for you that if A and C don't fight, that we're just going to mail them a winner's check and or a belt or a trophy. But I'm also not going to concede to you that it doesn't matter, that it's not helpful and useful. It is the greatest jumping off point that we have in this sport when we're trying to predict a fight. Francis Ngannou versus Joshua. And this is where the entire game of MMA math comes in. Francis has not blinked at boxing the top guys. In fact, he went out there and he fought Tyson Fury with very limited preparation. I mean, from what I'm told, he's got a bum knee. He comes off a bum knee and goes right into boxing. So at what point that knee was good enough to get your road work in and get your jump ropes in and get that ring and move around, I don't actually know, but it was only a matter of months. And he walked into the hardest fight on earth. He walked in against the biggest, the longest, the most durable, and the reigning heavyweight champion. Now, I bring that to you because I can't do fighter math for Francis versus Joshua. I can't do it because Joshua did not get in there with Fury, though he had the opportunity, though he was licensed, though he was offered, though he was in the weight class. I want you to sit and I want you to let that sink in for a second. When you tell me that competitive math doesn't work, look, I know it can only get me so far, but you're going to have a hard time when I tell you right back that attitude matters. That will matters. How bad does he want it? You guys hear that question all the time. How bad does he want it? Well, Francis wanted it bad enough to do it on one leg. Francis wanted it bad enough to do it at 11 in the afternoon in a different continent with possibly nobody watching. Francis wanted it bad enough to do all the things that I just stated and piss off the UFC of which he was contracted to at the time. Can we at least give Francis that he really wanted it? Can we at least give him that? Would it be reasonable for us to say that he wanted the fight with Fury more than Joshua wanted with Fury? I know we're going to have an argument back and forth there, but was that a reasonable statement? If you go to break down Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua, you do that on paper, you're going to look at Francis, you're going to have a great big O in the win column. How many times in your life has the promoter, the Don King, the Eddie Hearn, the Dana White, if you will, promoted a guy because he's got a great big O, and maybe he's taking another guy with an O, and somebody O has got to go because they're both undefeated. The guy I'm here talking to you about has got that great big O in the win column. How do you promote that? Well, obviously, if you've been following long, there's one hell of a story here. Could Francis be in this position without Tyson Fury? I don't think so. There was something about Fury, specifically, that respected MMA. And MMA and the community, you guys, are not nice to all boxers. You haven't been nice to Jake Paul. You have not been overly welcoming to Canelo. You were very nice and very opening and welcoming to Tyson Fury. And I believe it's because he went first. I believe it's because Fury said wonderful things about MMA, said he would like to do MMA, teamed up with Darren Till. I think they trained together for a week, but we got that footage of him sprawling and throwing kicks, showing that he had a sincerity towards our sport. I think that was the big olive branch. And I think that's why so many of you are open to Fury. Now, I got to remind you, when Fury and Ngannou were talking about fighting, I mean, they had every crazy idea in the world. Mike Tyson was going to be the referee. They were going to do it in a cage. They were going to do it in Alliant Stadium in Las Vegas. They were going to box, but it was going to be in 4-ounce gloves. They were going to change the rules, make it more of the Queensbury, make it more like Dave Feldman does with the bare knuckle boxing, where you could grab guys and you could fight out of a clinch. I mean, all of these things were discussed. And each and every one of those discussions, not one of them came to fruition, because not one of those ideas was good. It was terrible. You guys either have to box or don't. Somebody has to put it on the line. And in this case, it won't be Francis. Francis is going to go out and take an ass whipping, but he's not putting anything for risk. Fury gets to have an easy day at the office, but he's risking everything. That's the story. And if you try to take that from us, if you two get together and try to take that from us, we're not going to support the fight. These were the stakes when we're going into this. Fury pulls off for my lifetime and for my life's experience, the most surprising sporting moment I've ever witnessed. And when I say my lifetime, being 46 years young, I don't just mean in the last 46 years. I mean, in my lifetime, I've never seen this. I've seen videos and tapes. I go back to the day of Babe Ruth standing on the mound and he's going to hit the ball somewhere. I've never seen anything like this that struck me as more of a surprise, how competitive Ngannou was. And when you have guys that overperform or they give the perception that they've overperformed, you will quickly find out who the bullies are. Because the bully is the guy is going to go and try to get that fight with a guy that's got some shine. But the bully wasn't willing to fight him the day before. The bully had never asked for the fight. The bully didn't even call out the winner of the fight. He called the guy that lost for the fight. But the guy's got shine because the bully thinks that he performed better than he actually is. And I'm going to take all that shine, I'm going to rub him out. We quickly found out why Fury versus Joshua never happened. I mean, it's right there. Fury versus Joshua has been argued about, well, Fury wouldn't do it, or Joshua wouldn't do it. No, we now know. There's no more wondering. The moment that Francis overperformed against Fury and Joshua jumped out of his seat saying, please put me in there with the guy who just lost, we now know who was blinking and who was the skunk at the garden party for that. Now, which way are you going to go? Because it appears to be glaringly obvious. Francis Ngannou was one half of the most surprising sporting event I've ever seen. And he didn't even win, by the way. But one of the judges said he did. It was a split decision. A lot of onlookers said he did. Teddy Atlas, whose opinion I respect the most, said he did not. But Teddy Atlas went back and watched it three times until he came public with that conclusion. So can we at least agree, if Teddy Atlas had to watch something, rewatch something, and watch it a third time before he was confident in giving you his opinion, can we at least agree this must have been a pretty good performance? And one thing about Fury is he's a fighter. I can't take that from him. I can't say that he's smart. I can't tell you he's eloquent. A lot of those big heavyweights, you bring him over, take one look at him, say, man, you could be a tight end on any NFL team. You could be a starting center for the Los Angeles Lakers. It's not like that with Fury. That is not the most athletic guy that I've seen, but boy, is he a fighter. He can move. He'll carry that weight around. He won't quit. I don't know that I can give those same compliments to Joshua. I feel as though Joshua could go and make a run in the NFL, could turn some heads within the NBA. I feel that he's got a great body. He's got great DNA. I feel like he's got great athleticism. I don't know that I've ever found that he digs deep when he needs to. Francis Ngannou, to win the Fury fight, at least on the judges' scorecards that said he did win the Fury fight, had to dig deep. Can we agree? Francis Ngannou, to maintain his heavyweight championship, his last fight in mixed martial arts, had to dig deep and come back against Ciryl Gane. He actually had to turn to wrestling, which we'd never seen him use before or since. Can we agree? Francis Ngannou wants to be here, and it's not about the money, or at least not alone with the money, because he never blinked. He called for the top guys. He said, any one of you. And all of a sudden, they start falling into line. Okay, I'll go first, which means I'll go second. But his stance never changed. Joshua has done everything in the world. Feel free to disagree with me. I'm sure that you will. But he did everything in the world to not fight Tyson. Oh, by the way, he never did fight Tyson. So whether it was courage or politics or better at the game that you grew up in, either way, Francis beat him. In my opinion. But did Francis overperform against Tyson? I can't with good faith tell you he did not. I could not gather enough about Francis in those 30 minutes to tell you that he did not overperform, to tell you that he is not in fact that good, to tell you that Tyson didn't take him serious enough, wasn't prepared enough. Which are elements that Joshua will be able to correct. I just don't know enough about a guy in 30 minutes. But I feel very confident in telling you, you can't count him out. I feel very confident in telling you this is all of a sudden his home court. I was in Saudi Arabia a week ago. Francis walks into a fight. You should have seen it. You should have seen the swarms of people coming around. He has made this home. And in my opinion, he has a lesser fight than the one that one judge already says he won. I find Joshua to be a lesser fight than Fury. DraftKings is letting you take odds right now. They're going to pay out. All you got to do is download the app. Use my promo code SUNNEN. Sit back and enjoy, because at DraftKings, the crown is yours. All right, guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a reminder that if you want to support the show, you can leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or submit a 5-star rating on Spotify. I am off to Miami. That's a city in Florida. But I'm going to have another episode for you on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.